Canto Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents A Convenient Engagement by Ashton Newbold, narrated by Mary Sarah. Chapter 1. Sunlight came even more rarely than silence through Amelia Buxton's second-story window. It was not often that the two came together. But despite the hustle of carriages and neighbours beneath her, Amelia breathed a sigh of contentment as the sweet honey rays of the sun soaked into her cheeks through the glass.
Amelia?
The voice of her father hung in the doorway, making her jump. More rare than silence or sunshine each morning was the absence of that disapproving salutation from her father.
Good morning, Papa.
Amelia forced a smile, wiping away the perspiration from her palms. Mr. Buxton was not an intimidating man when one observed him in passing. With a slight frame, pale eyes, and neat hair, he appeared every bit the charming town gentleman. But when one dared a closer look, they were bound to find the frustration in his gaze, the snap of his lack of patience, and an utter disregard for his daughter's happiness. Mr. Buxton took another step through the doorway, raising his right eyebrow at Amelia. In all the features of her father's face, Amelia had come to learn that his eyebrows held the most expression. The right eyebrow had always been the one of pending censure.
"My sister has been rambling on about Brighton," he said. "I told you never to speak of your nonsense again."
Oh yes, her nonsense. The cure of the Brighton waters was far too famous to be claimed solely by Amelia. The Prince Regent himself had taken the cure, luring thousands to Brighton to experience it for themselves. Amelia swallowed as her arms erupted in goose flesh. The very thought of Brighton, of escaping the overcrowded, smelly boredom of Nottingham, set her heart racing. To be so near the ocean, to step in those legendary waters. It was a dream she had been clinging to for years, and now her Aunt Margaret had moved to Nottingham to live with Amelia and her family. Unmarried, joyous and free, Aunt Margaret held a spirit Amelia wished upon herself. To spend the summer in Brighton with her aunt would be the diversion she'd been craving. Aunt Margaret had suffered from a poor leg since childhood, always carrying a cane. In a casual conversation with her aunt, Amelia had mentioned the cure of the Brighton waters, the legendary idea that one could recover from any ailment by bathing in the waters daily, even drinking of them. But it was only a myth, of course, and if Amelia had noticed the extreme fascination in her aunt's eyes, she would have stopped immediately. It did little good to raise the hopes of such a desperate woman. Twisting her hands on her lap, Amelia scrunched her brow in false confusion.
"Have you not read such reports in the papers? Perhaps that is what spurred Aunt Margaret's fascination with Brighton."
"I know exactly what spurred her fascination with Brighton, and it was certainly not the papers."
The colour in her father's cheeks deepened with anger.
"You are never to give her such absurd ideas again. Do you understand?"
"I understand." Amelia avoided his eyes. She wanted to say more, but held her breath. Aunt Margaret had not stopped speaking of Brighton since the first day Amelia had mentioned it to her, telling Amelia's father that she planned to travel there herself. Aunt Margaret was a very independent woman, unmarried at the age of 48, but with the decline of her health, her brother did not trust that she could live and travel alone. Amelia had to force herself to hold her tongue each time her father rebuked her over her conversations with Aunt Margaret. Her father adjusted his cravat before clearing his throat.
"I cannot have you wasting your time on such frivolous matters. As you know, we are receiving Mr. Clinton for dinner this evening. I do hope you continue to impress him. He was quite taken with you on his last visit, but we cannot rely solely on that. I expect he has an offer of marriage on his mind for you."
Amelia tried to hide her revulsion. Mr. Clinton was nearly twice her age and carried a cane. She had never seen the appeal of a dandified man putting on ridiculous airs.
"But, Papa, you must know, I was far from impressed with him.
His face tightened once again.
That does not matter. You have had a fair pick of men, and it is time that you decided on one. If your mother were here, she might have aligned these things for you. But that is now my responsibility. I do not have much to give you, Amelia. You will need a husband to look after you. I am growing older every day.
Amelia studied his face and the harsh lines that marked it. Since the day her mother had died 6 years ago, her father had changed. He had grown even colder and even more aloof. The change hadn't been all at once, but little by little, much like the cloud that was passing over the sun. Amelia glanced out the window as the sky grew darker. He and her mother had never been in love. Amelia had seen the pain it had brought to both their hearts, hers too. Amelia secretly hoped to have a fate like her aunt's, for she did not need a man at her side to find joy in life. Amelia had watched as her mother found much more trouble than her husband was worth. But Amelia could not entirely discount the marriage. She had been born of it, after all. "We are all growing older, Papa," she said.
"Precisely. And you need to marry before you become a spinster, like Margaret. Lonely and pining after an absurd fabricated cure. You have made your bows in society, and you are lacking nothing that could make you a proper match. It is only your own desires and priorities that must be changed."
Amelia puffed out a breath. That she was lacking nothing that could make her a proper match was more absurd than the rumored cure. Brown hair was all the rage, yet hers was blonde and straight. Her eyes were a one-dimensional brown, not even with a single fleck of gold to bring a unique quality to them. Her efforts to play the pianoforte were quite novice, and her embroidery appeared to have been stitched by a blind woman. No, a blind child. A blind child without hands. She chewed her lip to keep herself from delivering her list of inadequacies to her father. It would not help the argument she was about to make.
"How confident are you in my ability to secure a marriage?" she blurted.
Her father crossed his arms, one eyebrow raising up again. It was his left eyebrow this time, the one reserved for inquisition.
"As I just professed to you, very confident, should you set your mind to it."
She stood from her chair by the window, taking two careful steps toward him. The idea she was about to propose could be catastrophic. Are very effective. There was simply no way of knowing beforehand. "You have said it before, that the men of Nottingham are rather dull and unrefined."
"Indeed."
"Including Mr. Clinton, might I add." Her father opened his mouth to rebuke her, but seemed to change his mind, conceding with a nod. Amelia took a deep breath, taking a handful of fabric from her lavender muslin skirt. "It seems to me that you have two problems that need solving. You have a sister, who is rather obsessed with the Brighton Waters, and a daughter, 1 in 20, who you need married off. Brighton has expanded in recent years, and is home to many eligible gentlemen. There is ample opportunity to be immersed in respectable society. If I were to travel there with Aunt Margaret, we could keep a careful watch on one another, and she will realize the Waters hold no cure. So her obsession will end. As for me, I will have many opportunities to meet potential suitors." Her father's jaw twitched and his eyes narrowed. She could almost see his mind spinning, working through the advantages and disadvantages of the idea.
He had not immediately rejected her proposed arrangement.
Perhaps there was hope. No, Amelia didn't plan to travel to Brighton with the intent to marry. In fact, there was little about marriage that attracted her at all. Women like Aunt Margaret were free and independent. They did not need the arm of a man to hold on to in order to live a happy life. In truth, Amelia wished to avoid the role of dutiful wife for as long as possible. She had never witnessed a joyful marriage, but for the sake of earning her father's approval of the trip, she needed to convince him of her devotion to husband hunting. He had been silent for so long, Amelia began to wonder if he had heard her at all.
"How could I be sure of your efforts?" he asked finally.
Aunt Margaret, she stammered. Aunt Margaret will be sure to report to you of all my acquaintances, flirtations, and every whit of attention I receive. Her father rubbed his narrow jaw.
I do not entirely trust her observations. Her memory is not what it used to be, as you know.
Indeed. Perhaps you might prompt her to keep a journal of my sociality. A sort of day-to-day record of my progress with the gentleman I come to know. Of course, Amelia would simply guide Aunt Margaret in writing these entries. Her aunt would be so pleased to be in Brighton that she wouldn't recognize the deceit for a moment.
That will not work,
her father said.
You could very well be formulating false scenarios for her to send me, just as if you were writing them yourself.
Drat, her father knew her too well. What gives you the idea that I should be so dishonest? She asked.
Because I know how little you desire to marry. You have declared your feelings on the matter many times.
Amelia's eyes burned. Perhaps I have experienced a change of heart.
A heart as stubborn as yours does not change in a day, my dear.
This had begun as Amelia's game, yet her father seemed to be winning. She tried her best not to let desperation enter her voice. It is not that I don't wish to marry any man, Papa. It is only the sort of gentleman you have chosen for me.
Oh? And what sort are they?
His voice had hardened. She sighed in exasperation. The sort like Mr. Clinton. Dull, quiet, stern. I am not opposed to marriage, only to a marriage that is going to make my life dull and quiet.
Not all the men I have introduced you to are such. Mr. Roberts was quite lively and exotic, and very agreeable. He was not dull and quiet at all.
Yes, but he was too much the contrary. There is a sort of man that lies between Clinton and Roberts, a man that is entertaining and kind, as well as intelligent, but not to the point of boasting. I do not tolerate boasting. He also must be friendly, but not to the point of desperation for attention, like Mr. Roberts. She stopped, noticing the exasperation in her father's features.
What makes you so certain you will find such a man in Brighton, of all places? I have tried for years. I even sent you to London for a season, and you returned without a single prospect. You may not like it, but you must settle for a man eventually, even if he falls short of your expectations.
He did not understand. Amelia puffed out another breath of frustration.
Of course, because that is what made you and Mama so very happy.
Silence fell in the air as her father's face deepened yet another shade of crimson. She swallowed. Had she spoken too plainly? It was a weakness of hers. But it was true. Her parents had never shared a smile or a kind word that Amelia had witnessed. They tolerated one another. And when her mother had passed away, it was as if her father had seen it as a sort of freedom. All the responsibilities that had been hers were now his, and he reveled in them. It was as if he were certain he performed them better than she ever could have. Amelia begged to differ. At least Mama had known what made a man handsome. Amelia's father set his jaw.
You are not going to Brighton.
His voice was final, and Amelia felt her heart sink. Papa, please!
You will gain nothing from the trip, besides an increased wayward imagination and a longer list of the unacceptable characteristics of men.
Her father turned toward the door, grasping the handle. I will gain something from the trip, she blurted without thinking. I will return engaged. Her father froze, turning his head over his shoulder to study her. Her heart hammered in her chest. You have my word. If you are so certain that it is only my own reluctance to marry that is preventing an engagement, then it should not be very difficult. If you allow me this trip with Aunt Margaret, I will return engaged. She held her breath. What had she done? Her father's expression lifted slightly.
And what if you fail to deliver on that promise?
Pardon?
If you fail to return engaged, what then?
She scowled. Are you asking me to choose my punishment?
Make it a steep one, my dear, for nothing short of that will work.
Amelia's mind raced in search of a suitable idea. If I do not return engaged, I will comb the horses for a month. Her father knew how much she despised stable chores. He shook his head.
That is far too simple.
I will consider furthering my acquaintance with the men of Nottingham.
Unspecific.
Very well. I will consider furthering my acquaintance with Mr. Clinton. She nearly choked on the name. Her father paused, deep thought evident in his features.
You will agree to marry Mr. Clinton, should he make the offer he has already suggested to me.
Her heart stopped. What?
Those are my terms. Should you accept this arrangement, I will be quite glad to send you to Brighton with Margaret.
Her father smiled, a nefarious grin that Amelia had never before seen on her father's face. How dare he suggest such a thing? She inspected his expression one last time. Unfortunately, he did not appear to be jesting. Marry Mr. Clinton? Amelia snorted back a laugh of disbelief. You would force me into such a marriage?
It is fair, is it not? Over the course of the next quarter year, you will have the opportunity to find a better alternative that suits your taste. It brings a fair amount of urgency to our arrangement.
He stepped toward her, giving her upper arm an affectionate squeeze.
I should expect a correspondence from your future husband, requesting your hand within the quarter. I dare say you will win yourself a good man, at least one more suited to your requirements than Mr. Clinton.
Amelia tried to settle the dread that roiled in her stomach. She could see no way to squirm her way out of this plight. Yes, she wanted to travel to Brighton, but she had imagined her days there filled with exploration of the seaside and relaxation. Not a desperate and pathetic search for a husband. She pushed her hair from her eyes, wishing she had styled the knot tighter. She could feel her chance of travelling to Brighton slipping away, with each second she refused to answer. The words leapt from her throat. Very well. It seems we have made ourselves a bargain, Papa. She extended her right hand to him. He looked down at it, a look of amusement flickering over his stern facade. Is this not what men do, upon striking a bargain? Amelia gestured at her hand. Her father chuckled, an actual chuckle, one that he didn't mask with a feigned cough. He was far too pleased with this arrangement for her liking. He shook her hand. The moment he let go, she felt the blood rush from her face. What had she done? She had just guaranteed her own marriage, one way or another. She had just given up all possibility of spinsterhood. Her heart thudded. She could not marry Mr. Clinton. It simply wasn't an option. So, she would have to meet the perfect man in Brighton, and somehow win his heart and an offer of marriage. But she had promised herself years ago that she would never marry. She would not look at her husband the way her mother had looked at her father. She would not whisper to her children late at night all the things she despised about him. Her father released her hand.
I'll let you be the one to inform Margaret of your pending adventures. I'll order a carriage. The two of you shall be on your way by Thursday next.
He didn't wait for Amelia to respond. She watched his bark as he stepped through the door, closing it behind him. Her shoulders slumped and she fell back onto her bed, trying to steady her breathing. All in a moment, the idea of Brighton had nearly lost its shine. How could she relax and enjoy the excitement of the town if she was expected to flirt with every man that crossed her way? Flirting had never been her strength. And what if she failed to find a suitable man? Not only did she have to find a man better than Mr. Clinton, but she needed to fall in love with him. Love was something people often spent a lifetime in search of, and many, like Margaret and her parents, never did find it. How could Amelia possibly find love in 3 short months? Such a feat seemed impossible. She was certain love was only a myth, just like the Brighton waters.
With a deep breath of fortitude, she sat up again.
Despite her worries, she couldn't help but smile at the thought of Aunt Margaret's reaction when she received the news of their trip. She would be in absolute raptures. Amelia was certain of it.
Chapter 2.
Pacing the damp shoreline for the last hour had done little to calm the rather taut nerves of Adam Claridge. He paused, glancing up at the open sky, a whispered prayer on his lips. Where was she? He sat down in the sand, ignoring the cold ocean water seeping through his breeches. His sister had been missing for almost a fortnight, and he hadn't a single idea as to her whereabouts. His days had been spent in continuous and unsuccessful search for her since the day she disappeared, yet he had achieved nothing. Gathering a fistful of sand, he threw it into the nearby water, cursing under his breath.
Go home, Adam.
He glanced over his shoulder at the sound of his father's voice. Shaking his head, he returned his gaze to the ocean. The soft crunch of sand underfoot told him that his feeble father was approaching from behind. His father's wrinkled hands settled on his shoulder.
You must rest.
Adam's throat tightened. He couldn't rest. Anxious energy coiled and sprung inside him, searching for answers relentlessly, yet coming up with nothing. He knew he should be tired, for he hadn't slept in 48 hours, but his eyes felt as if they were stitched open for fear of missing a clue that might lead him to his sister. Adam turned, crossing his arms, staring at his father's slight frame. The man was as near death as one could be, and still remained standing. He had been ill for months. His grey hair rose and fell with the breeze, undulating like the grasses beyond the sand where they stood. His skin hung like loose fabric, marked with creases of laughter and the now constant creases of worry and fear. Adam couldn't let his father's remaining days be filled with uncertainty and despair. One couldn't have a peaceful death when his daughter was nowhere to be found.
Go inside, father. I'm going to find Eleanor.
Adam rubbed his eyes against the sting of the salty spray of the ocean. Or was it simply fatigue? The water and sky beyond him blurred into one mass of blue and white.
How do you expect to find Eleanor? By walking the same 10 steps repeatedly?
His father questioned.
You may accomplish the same thing by sitting on the sofa within doors. Come now.
Mr. Claridge extended his thin arm, the shaking in his muscles evident. Rather than argue with his father, Adam took one more glance at the ocean before walking up the bank, supporting his father with his arm. Brighton had been the home of their family for generations, though recently it had become something of a novelty to travellers. The town was deemed a seaside resort, frequented by the Prince Regent, since the building of his royal pavilion. Adam had always resented the prince for ordering the construction of the grand building 27 years before. He had been an infant when construction began, and so he had only heard stories of the marvellous view of the sun rising and setting over the ocean that had once been seen from the front window of their home. Instead, they now had a clear view of the marvellous pavilion that drew so many interested parties to their once quiet town. And now, even more frustrating, he couldn't keep his eyes on the ocean from the comfort of home, because his view was so rudely obstructed. Something drew him to the sea in his search for Eleanor.
Now, lay down on the sofa and rest.
Adam's father hobbled through the doorway behind him, pointing a finger at the powder blue sofa near the window. Adam rubbed the back of his neck, just now noticing the ache radiating from the top of his spine to the bottom. He laughed, a choked sound. His father's eyes widened in shock before turning to a gentle rebuke. In 2 days, it seemed Adam had forgotten the correct way to laugh.
I find it amusing that you are ordering me to rest, Adam said,
leading his father by the arm toward the sofa. He resisted, clicking his tongue.
Lud.
The man was stronger than Adam gave him credit.
If you wish for me to rest, Then you must rest first. I will not rest until I am sure that you are not going to do something daft, his father said, his voice scolding.
Adam knew that voice. It meant there was nothing that could be said to change his father's mind. Stubborn was a gentle word for his father's personality. Adam drew a long breath, sitting down on the sofa, keeping his gaze locked with his father's sharp blue eyes. He gave Adam an expectant look, nodding toward his feet, motioning for him to relax. Adam sighed, lifting his feet onto the sofa and laying his head back. He was too tall for the furniture. His feet hung off the edge of the opposite side. Propping his hand behind his head, he raised his eyebrows for approval until his father nodded in satisfaction. It was vastly uncomfortable. Since his 16th birthday, Adam had been too large for this sofa. His father had once had a sturdy frame like his, and the same dark hair. Not all they shared in common was the blue eyes and the broken smiles. Adam watched as his father retreated into the hallway, noticing the slumping of his shoulders now that he believed himself to be out of Adam's sight. It was not fair that his father would have to suffer through so much uncertainty and pain in his final days. He had suffered enough pain already with his illness. He did not deserve to suffer anything else. Adam groaned and tried to sit up, keeping as silent as possible. He could not allow his father to die like this. Adam had to find Eleanor. He stood from the sofa, ignoring the lightness in his head, and walked carefully across the room to the hall. He passed his father's bedchamber in silence before turning into the study. He lowered himself into a broad leather chair, slapping the side of his face as his eyes drifted closed at the intoxicating smell of fresh parchment. He picked up a quill and readied his parchment. He needed to write down everything he knew before sleep stole his thoughts from him. The day of Eleanor's disappearance. Eleanor ate breakfast, took a morning walk, returned and took her embroidery outside near 1 o'clock, returned for dinner, left to take an evening walk with Miss Darby, but never arrived at their meeting place. Gone. Adam set down the quill, studying the words. It had been an ordinary day. It had taken him a great deal of thought to recall even the information that he did remember about Eleanor's whereabouts on the day of her disappearance, little as it was. What could he be missing? Adam had already spoken with Miss Darby and Miss Reed, Eleanor's closest friends, in an attempt to discover any other acquaintances she might have had. Any men that might have reason to abduct her. Adam's fist clenched. When he found the one who took her. Visions of broken noses and missing teeth flashed through Adam's mind. The man would wish he had never been born. He prayed she was alive. Eleanor had always been resilient and very firm in her resolutions. She was strong. She had to be alive somewhere, waiting to be found. He would never stop searching. The thought exhausted him and filled him with resolve at once. His father would see his daughter again. Adam would see to it. He would let nothing stop him, nothing slow his progress, not even sleep. He pushed away from the desk, ready to sneak from the house and show Eleanor's miniature portrait around town again. As he came to his feet, his legs nearly crumpled beneath him, and blood rushed from his head. Before he could reach the door, his vision flashed in black. He steadied himself, crashing against the doorframe. Adam! His father's rasped voice drifted through the hall. More quickly than Adam thought possible, his father stood in front of him, a scowl gathering the loose skin at his brow. A firm index finger extended down the hall to Adam's chamber. Sleep. It was as if his father had some power of his renewed determination not to sleep. For all resolve fled, and he followed his father's finger toward his chamber. Adam grumbled to himself, feeling very much like a child as his father pulled the blankets up over him. But before Adam could protest again, his eyes drifted closed, his muscles relaxed, and he fell into a deep and reluctant slumber. Chapter 3.
Aunt Margaret had
Sample complete. Ready to continue?